You are listening to The Pilgrim on the 405 with Will Crist. Join him as he and his guests discover how businesses thrive in California.
Well, welcome to The Pilgrim on the 405. We have a great conversation today with a lifelong entrepreneur. Don Williams he started 12 companies and has had a great time in all the things that he's doing, and he's published 3 books that are all great books. Amazon number one bestseller, and late in life he's found his real purpose, which is to help people accomplish their goals. So welcome to the Pilgrim on the 405, Don.
Thank you so much, Will. I'm happy to be here.
So tell us about your latest book that's just coming out.
So my latest book just released this week, and I'm fortunate that it went Amazon number one bestseller just this week. And that book is titled Build Your Big Legacy. And it talks about what we leave behind us after we're gone. At a certain point in time, I think I've been around entrepreneurs and been an entrepreneur my whole life. And I think at a certain point for entrepreneurs, their interest is in what do I leave as my legacy, and less on, you know, what's my next company, my next million, my next whatever. And so that book, we discuss that.
Excellent. Well, now, how does that fit into your purpose in terms of helping people to accomplish their goals?
So, glad you asked. I've been an entrepreneur since I was 26 years old. I'm 59. Started a bunch of companies. Like to say every one of them hit 500-foot home runs, but that's not true. Some of them hit 500-foot home runs.
You get a home run every time you come to bat.
Well, you can't. And, you know, some of those companies were dogs with fleas, and they didn't do nearly as well. But for the most part, you know, won far more than I've lost, and been blessed far beyond, you know, what I deserve. And so, in that entrepreneurial journey, I'm at the point, and I think many entrepreneurs very similar are at the point to where it's time to figure out how they want to give back. Even though I will say this, entrepreneurs as a whole are very generous all through their careers.
Yes.
Almost to a fault. Very giving, very generous people.
Well, now, you know, I'm with you, or at least I was with you up till several years ago, with the idea that there's the time of taking and then there's a time of giving back. And I'll share the challenge that I feel. I'll challenge you and we can talk about it together. But what I'm discovering is there's a whole movement about moonshots, about solving major problems. Now, to me, and this may be just my mindset, but giving back was sort of like joining SCORE or doing something like that. You know, saying I will help you with your sales or your financing or I will help you move forward. What I'm discovering is that there are a lot of entrepreneurs who are looking in the next 25 years to accomplish some major solution for problems. Now, how does that fit with your thinking?
Well, number one, I'm really, really excited about those moonshots.
Mm-hmm.
I love an entrepreneur or any person who will set extremely high goals, because I'm pretty sure that you can't achieve something really high and lofty if it wasn't on your radar, you know,
right,
if it wasn't your intention. And, you know, we're very active in mentorship. I live outside of Dallas, Fort Worth, Texas, and very active in mentorship with Texas Christian University, which I think will maybe.
Oh,
you
guys- yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Yeah. Go Frogs.
That's right, baby.
So, and when I first got involved with Neely School of Business and the Entrepreneurial College there, I was blown away at how big these kids think. And so the first mentoring day, and we kind of did it like speed dating. So you got to meet a bunch of kids, and I got to meet a bunch of entrepreneurs. And of course, the first question was always, so what kind of business would you like to start? And 100% of these kids, their answer was, well, I already have a business. And I was like, okay, well, what is your business? And then I was surprised that some of them had substantial businesses. They were not mowing yards, so to speak. They had a nice, respectable income out of their business. And so, you know, this much I do know is if you don't shoot high, you can't hit high. And so I'm thrilled with people that truly want to change the world. And, you know, I think I met Jeff Hoffman a couple of weeks ago, super guy. He invented the automated kiosk that spits out your boarding pass at the airport. So, you know, if you had to invent something, that was a good thing to invent.
Right.
And I think he sold that company for $90 million like 30 years ago when he was in his mid-20s.
Right.
But his philosophy was this: dream big, work hard, and create all the value that you can.
Yes.
And I think if you follow that, if you dream big, work your tail off, and create value for others, I think you can change the world.
Well, now, one of the things that I have found really helpful is when people start setting goals, especially if it's for the company, they will talk about shooting for the stars but being happy if we hit the moon.
Yeah.
And I encourage them to, whatever it is, if it's going to be the moon, then let's talk about the moon. If it's going to be the stars, we're not going to stop at the moon. We're going to go for the star. We might not win. We don't have any failures in my life. We either have successes or we have something to learn from.
Yeah.
And so set the goal out there, expect to get it, and work toward it. Does that make sense to you?
Makes perfect sense to me. I think Zig was the originator of shoot for the stars, and if you don't make it, maybe you hit the moon.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think Zig intended for people to kind of treat it as a dual goal.
Right.
I think he was just making a point. And the better strategy, in my opinion, is shoot for the stars, keep the goal. You might have to change some methods. You might have to change some tactics.
Absolutely. But that's what's important, is that if along the way we're looking at it every quarter and we're not on target, then let's take a look at what we need to do to get back on target. Let's not change the goal, keep doing the same thing. Otherwise, we're not learning anything.
Exactly. And I think you brought up a great point. Well, either you win or you learn. And learning is winning.
That's right.
Albeit a little different than the straight win, but it's still winning.
Well, you're still alive. You've learned. And so now when you do it the next time, you have a little further along that you've accomplished. And I think that's really important. Now, sometimes I hear people talking, especially in sales, about, well, here's our goal, and this is our stretch goal. Come on. What is this? This is our goal. This is our stretch goal. I mean, you don't need stretch pants unless you're not paying attention to your diet, right? So let's get clear about what our goal is, and then let's do everything that we can to get there.
Yep. I agree with that. So set that goal, set it hard, you know, write it down. If it's not written down, I don't know what it is, but it's not a goal.
That's right.
You know,
that's right.
Write it in a lot of places, tell a lot of people, carry it around on a card in your pocket, put it on the mirror, and be committed to hitting that goal.
Well, I'll give you a new place to put it. Make it part of your display background on your computer.
Oh, I love that.
That's what I have. I have my weekly planner. And it goes up there, so every time I turn on my computer, before anything else comes up, I'm reminded, uh-oh, there it is.
Okay, that was real wisdom, America. Listen to Will there. They get the background on your computer, and you could probably go ahead and include that as the background on your mobile device.
Absolutely.
Because I'm betting your eyeballs look at that mobile device.
Absolutely.
And look at your desktop. Oh,
that's right. That's right. So now, I really see this switch from I'm going to spend time helping others get started, which is noble, but there's a lot more power in saying, especially now that we know how to eat, exercise, sleep, and live longer, there's a lot of wisdom in taking the wisdom that we have and applying that to solve big problems.
No doubt.
So how can we get that out to the world that moonshots are how you stay alive?
That's a great question. How do we get it to the world? So,
yeah.
You know, my second book, Romance Your Customer, I talk about communication styles and the richer forms of communication. So what we're doing today is we're on a video-enabled audio call.
Mm-hmm.
So I see you and you see me, and it's almost like we're both in California, except I'm in Texas and it's a lot hotter here than it is there.
I grew up in Texas. Remember, I went to TCU.
And you're a smart man. You went to California.
So, that's right.
And I just got back from Las Vegas this week.
Oh, my goodness.
And it was 15 degrees warmer than it is here. So don't feel too bad for me. I was in the Bahamas the week before that. And so, you know, it all kind of averages out. But love mass media, love social media, love trying to reach the masses. But the richest form of communication is actually face-to-face, nose-to-nose, 3 feet apart. And we know that 70% of that kind of communication is actually nonverbal.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, it's inflection and emphasis and pause and my facial expressions, but it's more primitive than that. It's actually the energy that my body, my brain is emitting, and the energy that your body and your brain are emitting.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think the most effective way to get that message out there is one-to-one.
Mm-hmm.
Does that mean we shouldn't broadcast? No, we should. Okay. But as communications become more complex or more valuable, you know, they should climb that communication pyramid. They should go from the text to audio, and from audio to audio plus video, and from audio plus video, whether it's Zoom or FaceTime or Skype or whatever, then it should go to face-to-face. If you were going to go close a $1 million deal today, would you want to do it on social media?
Well, I don't think you can.
Well, would you want to do it on LinkedIn private messenger?
Well, you might dream about it.
But it's just not the way to go.
No.
Would you want to try and close it on the phone?
Well, isn't that part of the discomfort that many people have with the way that political decisions at the highest level are being announced? They're not face to face.
They're not.
Right? It's through a text. And it's like, wait a minute, have you had a conversation with that person before you start texting about them? I mean, whether you agree with the text content or not, it seems to me a little strange that it's not a face-to-face thing.
Well, I think today, you know, regardless of which side of the aisle you're on, is we have a bunch of people that they're really not interested in talking with each other.
No, no.
And I'm not even sure they're interested about talking at each other. I think they're most interested in talking about each other.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, and that's not good human interpersonal.
Well, and you know, this is I brought it up not to critique what they are doing, but
yeah,
to emphasize what you were saying, that the most effective conversation is one-to-one.
No doubt.
And now, to me, the other levels that you were talking about are ways of identifying the one-to-ones that you want to spend time with.
No doubt.
Right?
No doubt.
Because the ways that we did it before are not working. You know, the book said, we're bowling alone. We don't have those social groups where we're rubbing against each other. And so what we substitute is networking groups, which, you know, it's not even speed dating. It's not dating at all. It's something else. And I just don't participate in a lot of networking groups anymore because there's something there that just doesn't feel right anymore. I'm not meeting people to get to know them. I'm trying to make a contact to either make a sale or move something forward, or I'm trying to resist what they're trying to do.
Yeah. So I think a lot of, you know, pure networking groups, a good friend of mine, Nicholas Kuzmich, guy out of Toronto, number one Facebook advertiser in the world, according to Forbes magazine. He shares a bit, and it's titled Sex with Strangers. And he said, you know, that's basically how people approach trying to do business anymore. It's just,
okay, good.
Here's who I am. Please buy my stuff. And except they don't even say please. It's like, here's who I am. Please buy. And maybe they don't even say, here's who I am. It's just buy my stuff.
No, it's not even that. It's just send me your money.
There you go. I don't care if you get the stuff or not. Yeah.
Just send me your money.
there is certainly a big contingent of business owners, entrepreneurs, corporations, major corporations that are kind of interested in that model. And I think that's, you know, very short-sighted. Some of the pure networking groups, I believe, are that way. You know, there are some. So I'm very active in Entrepreneur Organization, which is a
EO?
Peer group, EO.
Yes.
14,000 of us around the globe.
Yes.
Phenomenal organization, not a networking organization.
Yes.
A learning organization.
Yeah.
Others would be Vistage, mm-hmm. YPO. I mean, there's some great stuff out there. And if you're an entrepreneur and you don't feel like you have a community of like-minded people, my gosh, you know, reach out to Will. He can put you on to half a dozen different groups for you to go look at and talk mm-hmm. with people. Mm-hmm. I've been active. EO is my flavor of choice. I've been active there for about 6 or 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
Totally changed my life, because previously in all my entrepreneurship, my primary goal was I didn't want to be bothered. And so
I
pretty much managed my life and my companies, and I was good at it. I wasn't very bothered.
Yes.
I was comfortable. Life was good. And so then you start meeting all these other people, and your universe just explodes
yes.
as to the possibilities. And so where for 25 years, my whole goal was to be comfortable.
Yep.
Now, personally, I exit my comfort zone every day
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
because here's what I've learned about comfort zone physics. If this yep. is my comfort zone and I leave, my comfort zone grows
mm-hmm.
to include where I went to. And then I leave my comfort zone and my comfort zone grows again, and so on and so forth. And so it's my personal goal to leave my comfort zone every day. 3 years ago, I wrote my first book. Like, my brain had a baby. It was painful. I cried. I said some nice words. I looked for an epidural. There wasn't one. And we got the book out.
Let me ask you, was your intention? How did you approach writing that book? Now, I don't want to know what you did to write it, but there's always the option to write a book.
Sure.
All right. Some people write it for, well, I don't have to go into that. Just there's a variety of reasons people write books. What was your intention? I'm going to write this book because.
Okay, I'm not proud of this, Will.
That's
But I am truthful.
Well, I'm having difficulty getting beyond the why for me.
Okay, so my first book, one of my companies is in the contact center or call center business, so phone calls. And we primarily do outbound business-to-business cold calls. We work for manufacturers and pharmacies and work for over half the Fortune 500 at one time or another.
Mm-hmm.
we would get prospects that weren't really prospects, but that would approach the company, and we would invest a lot of time knowing that they're just not going to be able to make the financial investment required to work with somebody like us.
Mm-hmm.
So, and remember, I started this. I'm not proud of this, Will.
That's okay. It's okay.
I wrote this book so that we could, so that our sales team could say, Mr. Prospect, the best thing I could do for you is let me send you a copy of this book. It's a do-it-yourself book, and it'll teach you everything you need to know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really wrote it not to help people.
That's going to fall flat on their face.
Well, not even a fall. We tell them everything.
Yes, yes, but they can't do it.
They can't do it, no.
Right.
No, you can tell
I'm
me
right,
how to
right. I got the book.
You can tell me how to do heart surgery. I can't do it. But the interesting thing that came out of that was this. 3 months later, 6 months later, a year later, some of those same people are calling back.
Of course.
And yeah. saying, but I want to hire you to do it.
I tried it. I understand how you do it. And it really sounds good. I told my people to do it. They didn't do it. It's their fault. So I'm going to hire you.
Yeah.
Ah,
and so,
okay.
But that is why I wrote the book. Now, the second book, I have to follow with something a little more positive than that.
Okay.
The second book, Romancing Your Customer. For the last 30 years, working with these Fortune 500 companies on marketing, sales, and customer service, I've seen some beautiful work by major companies.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You know, Emirates Airlines. I can tell you a story there. They knock it out of the park. Now, I don't care who your cell phone provider is. There's only three or four of them in the country or the primaries. But odds are you don't have that same experience with them.
Mm-hmm.
And so in Romance Your Customer, I talk about how to elevate customer experience to a love language.
Mm-hmm.
And to where your customers are not only fans, but they love you. And I share strategies from that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been a much... It's a much better book. Second book's better than the first book, shocker.
Right.
And so on. And then the third book, and number four is upcoming. I'll probably write books forever for now.
Uh-huh.
I have words,
yes.
things I want to say. But the third book is about the legacy, not only for your company, but I think most people are most motivated about the people they love,
uh-huh.
and families can be biologic or not.
Uh-huh.
And that's the biggest piece of legacy that we talk about in that book.
Good. Well, it sounds to me like the first one is sort of like the first baby, that it's unexplored, but there's a process that's not going to stop once you get committed to it.
Yes.
And it does involve pain.
It was painful. The second one was much easier. I got a lot. I was a lot smarter.
That's
about
what my wife tells me.
Yeah, I was a lot smarter about how to do it, and the third book was even easier. And so, you know, I expect the fourth to be the easiest to date.
Good, very good. So, what is it that? Who is your audience today?
So, great question. The people that I help the most in my coaching practice are twofold. I have corporate executives that almost exclusively work with on transformational leadership.
Mm-hmm.
And that there's a lot of transactional leadership out there. And, you know, and a lot of that kind of starts with the military's version of command.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very effective in the military,
mm-hmm.
but they have an unusual degree of control over the people they're leading.
Well, and what's part of the biggest difficulty for vets?
Oh, yeah.
Moving out of that into
Absolutely.
What today in business is a very transformational environment.
Absolutely. Very, the gears grind.
Yes.
When they go from one form to the other.
Yeah.
And so that's the corporate
okay.
clients. And then I have business owners and entrepreneurs. And it's about half and half leadership. And the other half is either sales, customer experience, or culture.
Mm-hmm.
All of which I believe in playing from your heart. And almost everybody in business owner, corporate exec, they got the brain power. They have the horsepower under the hood. But sometimes a person loses, you know, the path from their heart. Mm-hmm. And truthfully, the magic, you know, can you get a 10% increase in your sales out of your head? Probably. Okay. Can you raise your customer satisfaction index? Probably. Can you raise your net promoter score? Probably. Can your 360 reviews improve? Probably. But if you want to turn the world on its end, play from your heart and you'll see wholesale changes. It's harder. It takes longer. Okay. Because our comfort zone is I want to continue to do things the way I've always done them. Mm-hmm. I don't want to change. And to play from your heart takes courage because you have to be vulnerable. And vulnerability says, I'm going to take this action and I do not know the outcome. If you know the outcome, it's not really courage.
That's our moonshot, right?
Yeah, it is. And so so that's what I help most people with, is in one of those areas, but all from a heart-centered approach.
So talk about what to do to move from a focus on a head approach to a heart approach.
I love that. Thank you so much for asking. So here's how I did it.
Send me the check.
There's probably a million ways to do it. I'm not saying I have, you know, I'm not the 67th book of the Bible. I'm not saying I have the only way to get it done.
No.
But let me tell you how I did it.
Yes.
A couple of years ago, I was in Bangkok, Thailand at a conference. I heard a lady talking about energy and intuition and how the body works, and that your biorhythms are at their absolute highest when you are feeling and expressing gratitude. Mm-hmm. And at their absolute lowest when you're feeling or expressing shame.
Mm-hmm.
Which, oh my gosh. You know, if let me encourage you, if there's something in your life that you feel shame over, talk with somebody. Let's get rid of that.
Yes. Yeah.
So I came away from that conference knowing that I needed to work on my own gratitude.
Mm.
And so I literally bought a galvanized pail at the hardware store and put a card in it. And I wrote gratitude, and I'm at my home office because I have the little pail with the cards behind my desk in my office. And I carry that little pail around with me for about 6 months. It would sit in the car or in the truck or in the den or at the office, and just to be a physical reminder that I was going to work on gratitude. And then I started a gratitude exercise with my leadership team. And so every Monday morning for about 15 minutes, about 10 of us, we'd share what we call one good thing.
Mm-hmm.
And one good thing is you'd share one thing that was positive in your life from the previous week, business, family, or personal. And shocking to me, no one has ever stood up and said, I am so grateful that Don Williams is my employer. He's the best boss ever. And I've even hinted that it would be a good thing for them to do that. Crickets, nothing. So I'll see if I can tell this. We'd been doing this about a year. Lady who'd worked for me for probably 15 or 20 years. I was out of town. I knew she was out of town just looking at reports. When we came back that Monday, I knew that her daughter had been pregnant, but I didn't know the rest of the story. And so when it came to Deb's spot, and I have permission to share this, she said, I was off last week. My grandson, what we didn't know is that the doctor had told the mother the baby will probably not survive the pregnancy. If it does, will not survive the birth. If it does, it will not survive the hour. It had a congenital defect that the baby was going to be terminal. But we didn't know that. So when she shared her one good thing, she said, my grandson was born last week. He lived an hour. And she was grateful. And she was grateful because the parents and the grandparents got to hold her grandson and tell them they loved him.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started this gratitude exercise in my company thinking I'm teaching my employees. I'm the hero. I'm gratitude. And my gratitude's not at that level yet.
Yeah.
But I have seen the PhD in gratitude.
Oh, my goodness.
And I yet aspire to that. So the very first thing I would promote to anyone is be sure your gratitude's in line. Uh-huh. And if you can be grateful for the things that go well, you bought a new car, you won the lottery, okay, good for you. But I don't think that's really gratitude.
Right.
When you can be grateful for things that are hard, when you can see the bright, shining moment, then I think your gratitude meter is about where it needs to be.
Yeah.
And that's step one. Step two is I think you need to look at your attitude. And I love Zig. I was honored enough to meet him once. I worked with his brother, Judge, who was actually the world record guy in pots and pans. But way back in the day.
It's like Elrond talks about being the top record guy in Cutco knives.
Yeah. And I know the current top guy in Cutco knives. Great guy out of St. Louis, Missouri, and he sold so many knives. Cutco would call him and say, "You're lying. You're defrauding the company." Okay, true story. I'll introduce you. He'll do your show with you.
Okay, great.
Awesome.
Well, wonderful.
Awesome guy.
Back to number two.
Back to number two. Number two is you got to change your attitude. And I don't mean light your hair on fire and run around and jump up and down. I don't even think Zig meant that.
Yeah.
Okay. What I do think is this, you have to change your perspectives. Okay. So my perspective is, which glasses am I wearing when I'm looking at that? So most people who come to me, most business owners, most sales teams, most corporate execs on sales, they come to me and they're like, sales is hard. I can't make people buy. Nobody wants to buy. And Will's laughing because he hears that too.
Sure.
And my response is always, you're right.
They don't want to buy. No.
They don't really want to buy. And you can't make them do anything short of having a whip and a chair and a gun.
That's right.
And even that won't last very long.
You got it.
But the right perspective is this. Is number one, you have to be positive that what you represent, the product, service, or experience that you bring to the marketplace, that it's worth owning, and that it's worth more than the dollars that you receive.
Absolutely.
Okay. And so that's item number one of step two. Once you have that down, then you have to understand, actually, people love to buy. People need to buy. People want to buy. People are compulsed to buy. And if you don't believe that, in the wealthiest country in the world, average household income about $50,000. Even what we view as poverty, most of the world would not say it's poverty.
Say, where can I get there?
The average household in America cannot lay its hand on $1,000. Now, what does that say?
That's spending a lot of money.
That means they're spending everything they get. Right. They don't want their money. They want product, services, and experiences.
Right, right.
Okay? And if that's a $5 cup of coffee, they want it. If it's a $100 a month cell phone, they want it. So what you have to do is you have to position your message to where they want your product, service, or experience more than they want your dollars. Because I assure you, they don't want their dollars. Right. They want nothing to do with that.
Right. What's a dollar? What's a dollar?
Yeah. Money's right. Only worth what you can trade it for. It has no value in and of itself.
Right.
And so once you begin to change those perspectives, how you see things, it's amazing how things get a little easier. The next thing is this. So I have a Jaguar in the garage. I got an F-150 pickup in the garage. I got a couple other cars. The rearview mirror on that Jaguar is about this big. Okay, so it's maybe 3 inches by 8 inches. The front windshield is about 30 inches by 5 feet. So I got 24 square inches versus 1,500 square inches. Why is it that people in their life look in their rearview mirror like it's the great big window to look out and spend so much time looking in their past instead of looking into your future? So when we talked about setting goals, mm-hmm. when you set that goal and then you spend about 95% of your vision, your effort, your mental ability looking on where you're going, not on where you're at and not on where you've been, you almost can't do anything but end up where you're looking.
Well, let me add one thing to that.
Please.
All right. So you've got the goal and you've got where you are and you're moving forward. I agree. You've got to be looking in the windshield, looking forward. So many people in doing that they continue to look at the gap in between where they are and where they want to be. And they feel the negative aspect of that. I'm not there yet. And my God, look at how far I've got to go. Now, keeping that same model with where I am, where I was, where I am, and where I'm going, let's pay attention to how far we've come and give thanks for that, rather than feeling the anxiety about, I haven't gotten there yet.
I wholeheartedly agree. And so, you know, just like they teach you way back when I was 16, they had cars when I was 16. But they taught me what at night, keep my vision out beyond my headlights.
Yes.
Don't look at that illuminated part. Look at the end. And I think you make a good point there. Look at the end of where those lights are, not on that next bit. I do think you have to look up in your rearview mirror every once in a while.
For gratitude. Look how far we have come.
Look Absolutely. How far.
And if we've hit the ceiling and we don't think we're moving forward and we're frustrated, let's take a deep breath and give thanks for how far we've come, which to me gets to where you're talking about that whole notion of, oh my gosh, let's be thankful for what we've done.
I agree.
And that opens us up to looking at the possibilities for the future. Oh, wow. Well, we could go on. This is great. This is wonderful. So what are you excited about in the next 6 months?
Wow, the next 6 months. So in September, I'm in four different countries speaking. I'm the kind of guy who nothing makes me more happy than giving me a microphone and push me to a stage.
No, I would not believe that for a second, Don. I mean,
oh, yeah, I'm sure.
You were so reluctant to be on this show.
And yeah, sure.
It's been like pulling teeth to get you to talk.
Yeah, well, not really. But, and we should tell your audience this. We met through social media on LinkedIn.
Yes.
And you, bless your heart, reached out and said, hey, could we have a phone call? Moving up that pyramid of communication.
Right.
And we had a phone call. And now I'm a guest on your radio show. And this is not, I don't know where the end is, but Will, this is not it.
No. We're just getting off the blocks. We got a lot of I got 25 years. How about you?
Yeah, well, I got 25 plus a couple.
Excellent.
Plus a couple.
Very good.
And so I'm thrilled about the speaking that's coming up. I'm thrilled about clients that I'm helping today, and I'm blessed beyond measure in that my other businesses. So your audience knows that you're an EOS implementer.
They should.
Okay, they better. Well, we don't. Will Christ is an EOS implementer.
That's
and
right.
EOS is an accountability system that helps business owners improve their business.
It transforms them. No question about it.
No doubt. And so I'm so fortunate that I have that implementer that runs my companies. And so
right.
I'm gone most of the time. They like me being gone most
right,
of the time.
That's right. We'll let you come up with the next 30 ideas. But
I like me being gone most of the time. It kind of works for everybody.
Yeah.
So, and then at about the end of that 6 months, we're going to spend a month in Africa.
What are you doing in Africa?
So I have a conference, a four-day conference. In Cape Town, but I just figure a four-day conference requires about 25 days of play.
Uh-huh.
It's just a good rule of thumb. And
so what does play mean for you?
So We love to travel, only go places we've never been before. The world is a very big place. Mm-hmm. Love other cultures. And so we'll scope out. In April, we spent 23 days in mainland China and a couple of days in Macau. So in that time frame, and this wouldn't float everybody's, okay, but in that time frame, we did 13 flights. And so we bounced all around China, hired a guide, flew her with us, got her rooms with us. We were with her 24/7, except when we were sleeping, and went and saw and did as everything we could do, just like kids in the candy store, uh-huh, for 25 days.
Nice.
And so Africa's next.
So you're going to do that there?
Going to do that in Africa. We'll be in Europe the end of September, but only about 10 days.
Uh-huh. Excellent. Excellent. Well, that's wonderful. I really enjoyed the conversation here. I'm really glad that you that reluctantly you allowed me to get you onto the show.
So Will kind of whispered, "Hey, would you like to be on my show?" And I was like, "Sure, I'm going to do that."
That's right.
Thank you so much for inviting me and having me and hosting me so graciously.
Well, this is great. Is there anything you'd like to say to the folks that are listening to this?
I hope things are going phenomenally well for you. And if they're not, get some help. And help can be work on gratitude. Help can be an EOS implementer like Will, okay, who has a long track record of helping business owners get control of their business. Help can be a coach like me. And there's a zillion of us. It doesn't have to be me, okay? But you're not alone. I want to encourage you. If things aren't going the way you'd like them to, get some help because you can do it.
Thanks a lot, Don. This has been just another great show giving you insight into how to make businesses thrive, not only in California, but all across the world. So look forward to seeing you again on the Pilgrim on the 405.
You've been listening to the Pilgrim on the 405 with Will Crist.